again, a happy Father's Day to the fathers here present today. I'd like to honor you. I'd like to recognize you. So all the fathers who are here, if you would please stand at this time, visitors included. If you're a father, please remain standing. I don't have a gift for you. Larry was saying, what are we going to give the fathers? I said, they're going to have donuts later on. That's enough. There actually is something. On the Mother's Day, we gave the mothers a little nail kit. So men, if you would like a nail kit, you may get one from Brother. He's got them. Seriously, he's got one as you leave today. But you might want to do this without anybody seeing you. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, they're very nice. And gentlemen, some of you need to use a clippers and not chew your nails. So you can get that as you leave. Now, seriously, thank you, gentlemen, for, I assume, being the leaders in your homes, for taking a stand, for doing what's right. Even if your kids are grown, for being the grandfather, the great-grandfather that you need to be. And I trust that the message this morning will be a challenge to your hearts. Thank you. You may be seated. And while you're being seated, if you would please turn with me to Psalm 44. I read some time ago, and I think I've read this to you before, about what to buy your father for Father's Day. When in doubt, buy him a cordless drill. It does not matter if he already has one. One man owns 17 and he has yet to complain. As a man, you can never have too many cordless drills. For that matter, any power tool is a good choice. He may not need it or know what it does, but it'll look good hanging on the peg in the garage. No one knows why. Rule number two, if you cannot afford a cordless drill, buy him anything with the word ratchet or socket in it. Men love saying those two words. Hey, George, can I borrow yours? Ratchet? Okay, by the way, are you done with my 3/8-inch socket set yet? Again, no one knows why. Rule number three, if you are really, really broke, buy him anything for his car. A 99-cent ice scraper, a small bottle of de-icer, or something to hang from his rearview mirror would be just perfect. Men love gifts for their cars. Rule number four, never buy a man anything whose packaging contains the phrases, some assembly required, or read the enclosed instructions. It will ruin his special day, and he will always have parts left over. Rule number five, men enjoy danger. That's why they will barbecue. Get a man a monster barbecue with a 100-pound propane tank. Tell him the gas line leaks. Oh, the thrill, the challenge. Anyone want a hamburger? And they've got a bunch of others. Just kind of help you people out with Father's Day. It's kind of late, but maybe that'll be a help to you. I would like to publicly give thanks to the Lord for my father. My father passed away in 1999. And as you men would say, much of what I am is because of what my father taught me. And I thank God for my dad. My dad was someone who took a stand. My dad was a strong Christian man. My dad was outspoken. My dad was opinionated. Now you're saying, well, that's where he got it. Yeah, and that's what we're going to be looking at this morning. I thank God for my father. Even as a teenager, people had a hard time distinguishing me on the telephone with my dad. I would answer the phone and they would say, Dell? I would say, no, this is his son, Dan. I spoke like him, like father, like son. You ever notice the walk of boys? I don't know if you see it in my boys. I've never seen it because I don't know how I walk. But sometimes when you see a child walk with the father, you go, that's where he got it. They have the same walk. They swing their arms the same way. They hold their hands the same way. You just see so much of the father in the son. But what we're looking at this morning, folks, is that the likeness is not just in the physical realm. It is also in the spiritual realm. Like Father, like Son. Sometimes it's hard to figure out a man. Then you meet his father. And you go, no wonder he's a good worker. Or no wonder he's lazy. Because they've learned from their father. And somehow, fathers think that their children are going to be more spiritual than they are, that somehow their son or their daughter will turn out right, even if I'm not right. My challenge to you men today is this. Your faith, Dad, is important because like Father, like Son. Psalm 44, read with me as I read verses 1 through 8. We have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us what work thou didst in their days in the times of old. How thou didst drive out the heathen with thy hand and plantedst them. How thou didst afflict the people and cast them out. For they got not the land in possession by their own sword, neither did their own arm save them. But thy right hand and thine arm and the light of thy countenance, because thou hadst the favor unto them. Thou art my king, O God, command deliverances for Jacob. Through thee will we push down our enemies. Through thy name will we tread them under that rise up against us. For I will not trust in my bow, neither shall my sword save me. But thou hast saved us from our enemies and hast put them to shame that hated us. In God we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever, forever. And then you'll see that musical notation there, Selah, which is probably something to do with like a forte, or more likely, an instrumental interlude. And so we don't read that word, but it's there. Perhaps that is forte, which means, musical people, loud. What is he saying right there? In God we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever. I want us to look at three things in this passage this morning. First of all, in verse 1, I want you to see the author of what was heard. Look at the title of the author. Father. Who is it that who's doing the speaking? Who is it, since these, he is saying, we have heard with our ears, who then is doing the speaking? It's our fathers. It's the dad. Father is the very first word in the Hebrew lexicon. It's the very first word in a Hebrew concordance. It's the very first word. If you go home and you look in your Strong's concordance, and you know how they have the little number after every word that you find in there? And it says, look up word number 1213. You go to the back of your concordance and you can find the Hebrew word. If you look up the word father, right after that's going to be the number 1. Because father is the very first word in the Hebrew lexicon. It's the word av. Or if you were to make it a hard consonant, ab or abba. Can you see a baby learning to say that very first thing as a child? Can a baby say abba? Yeah, they're very good at ba-ba-ba, you know, the ba-ba-bas. The ab, av, that is the word father. Even an infant can pronounce that. A word that is used 3 times, by the way, in the New Testament concerning our relationship with our Father, God. Abba, Father. Father speaks of a head or a founder of a household. The originator. The producer. One upon whom you depend for life. There has for the last number of years been an assault on fatherhood in our country. The rise of feminism has made some men apologize for being part of a patriarchal society where it is the man who leads, it is the man who rules the family. If a man desires the office of a bishop, the Bible says he must rule his own family well. If a man takes the place of a deacon, he must be somebody who rules well his family. He is the leader. Instead of Father Knows Best today, though, it's Bart Simpson's Dodo Dad. Or it's Everybody Loves Raymond. Or other shows where the father is a bumbling idiot. Or something, they're always portraying the father as irresponsible, perhaps an overbearing tyrant, as monster males. And unfortunately, many fathers portray the same. But more than anything, men have become feminized. Sissies. Girly men. Men who can't take a stand. Men who back off and don't say, this is what's wrong today. In America today, a large percentage of all children living in households are doing so without their biological father. I've read that more than a quarter of American children are raised in fatherless homes. About 40% of the kids who are growing up in father-absent homes haven't even seen him in the past year. Gentlemen, don't shrink to the trash of Hollywood. Aspire to what the Bible displays. Take the lead without apology as God designed. Use, don't abuse the authority that God has given you. And this is not a cultural issue. This is a creation issue. The Bible says, for Adam was first formed, then Eve. And based upon that, Paul makes his argument for the father taking the lead. So we see the title of the author is Father and everything that that means. But here in this passage, we have heard with our ears, O God. Our fathers have told us. The children heard from their fathers spiritual things. Fathers easily talk of all kinds of things: sports, cars, hunting, work. But why is it when it comes to spiritual things, their tongue is tied? Charles Spurgeon once said, when fathers are tongue-tied religiously with their offspring, need they wonder if their children's hearts remain sin-tied? The sad fact is that what children are hearing with their ears is not coming from their fathers, but from some heathen teacher, some news media outlet, some social media where somebody's on there on their little soapbox. Or they're hearing it from Hollywood, they're hearing it from a friend at school. Here, the father is the one who is doing the talking, and the children are doing the listening. Two things that are rarely seen today: the father speaking of spiritual matters and the children listening. There is the title of the author, Father. Then we see the integrity of the author. The integrity of the author. We have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us, what work thou didst in their days, in the times of old. What work thou didst in their days, in the times of old. You notice here that the author, the fathers, are not speaking or talking about themselves. Who are they bragging on? Many men spend time bragging about themselves because they're so full of pride and they have such a big ego. Fathers today are so insecure that they are concerned that their kids think much of them rather than much of God. So they try to impress their kids. They want a legacy. Think about this verse in Proverbs chapter 20, verse 7. A righteous man who walks in his integrity, how blessed are his sons after him. Did you get that? A righteous man walks in his integrity, his sons who come after him are blessed. You see, men, you should not be so much concerned about legacy as integrity. A man of integrity will necessarily have a good legacy. irresponsible fathers. Leave the Bible teaching to the wife. She perhaps is the one who has to take the initiative to get them to church or to get them to Sunday school. Or they leave the teaching to the church. Or they leave the teaching to the Christian school. But here it is the fathers who do the teaching. The psalmist here says, our fathers have told us what work thou didst in her days. And notice what it says in the last part of that verse, in the times of old. Children make fun of the old. Children make fun of the fact that one day you didn't have a cell phone. You mean you couldn't just text somebody? They make fun of the fact that in the olden days you had exercise watching TV. Because somebody had to get up, go to it, and turn the channel. And they make fun of the old. You mean one day you had a typewriter? What is that? What do you mean you had to walk to school up a long hill both ways? I did. I went to a one-room schoolhouse in Nebraska, one of the last ones that they had, and I literally walked up a long hill both ways. You don't believe me? I would love to take you there sometime. Because we would go down a long hill and then go up a long hill. Well, that means coming back, you went down that hill and went back up that long hill. Both ways. Our fathers have told us what work thou didst in their days in the times of old. I used to love to listen to my grandfather talk about the olden days. And then when he was done, he would say, don't ever believe when somebody says those were the good old days. They were not good. They were hard. But I'll tell you something. They were good because it was the hard that made men men. That is today not making men. The author of what was heard. Father. Then notice the topic of what these children heard. The topic is given in verses 2 to 3. How thou didst drive out the heathen with thy hand and plantedst them. How thou didst afflict the people and cast them out. For they got not the land in possession by their own sword. Neither did their own arm save them, but thy right hand and thine arm and the light of thy countenance, because thou hadst a favor unto them. Can you imagine these fathers telling their kids, you know, what God had done in years past? Children love to hear stories. What stories are they hearing from you? God's work in the old days. Not Israel's work, but God's work. And the fathers recognized that God was behind all the benefits. Notice the pronouns in verse 2. Thou and thy, referring to God. Notice what was learned from the fathers in verse 3. For they, my dads, got not the land of possession by their own sword, neither did their own arm save them. Hey, let me tell you something that took place, son. There was a day when we needed to defeat this city. But before we could defeat this city, we had to cross the Jordan River, and it was impossible because it was in its flood stage. But I want to tell you what happened. We got to that river. And the priests got up to the river, and they were carrying the Ark of the Covenant. You know what the Ark of the Covenant is, right, son? And when they got there, their feet touched it, and you should have seen it. It was awesome. The water began to back up. This has never been seen before. It'll probably never be seen again. The water backed up all the way to the city Adam. And we walked across that river on dry ground. You should have been there. And I tell you, when we got into the middle of that river, we picked up 12 huge stones, 12 men did. They brought it out of that river. And then on land, we picked up some 12 stones and brought them back and put them in the middle of that river. We got to the other side, and we watched that water come. You know what that did for us? We knew how great our God was. And then when we were told that we're going to march around this city 7 times, we didn't complain. We thought this is going to be something else, to see God do something here. And son, you know what happened? For the first day, we marched around that city. And then the second day. And then on the seventh day, we marched around seven times. And that's when we were given a shout. And the trumpets blew, and you should have seen what happened. The walls fell down flat. An impenetrable city. And God did something great that day. But I can go back even before then and tell you about how we came out of the land of Egypt. We were trapped. We said, this is it. And our leader, under the leadership of God, said, you wait and see the salvation of the Lord. And son, that's what we saw that day. He took the rod of God and he put it out over the Red Sea. There were mountains on the right, mountains on the left, and the armies of Pharaoh behind us. There was nowhere for us to go but forward, and there was this huge sea. And we saw that sea split wide open. And we marched through there on dry ground. You want to hear any more stories, son? Well, let me tell you what happened then. After we marched through, Pharaoh's army came in after us. We looked back and watched as the sea, which by the breath of God had been blown apart, was now let go. And it covered the enemy, and we saw them drown in the sea. I'm telling you, I've got more stories for you. You want to hear the one about the day that the sun stood still? Or maybe you'd like to hear the one of the day when we were surrounded by the Assyrian army. And we woke up the next day because our leader said, let's trust in God. And 185,000 soldiers lay dead. Or let me tell you of Gideon. Or let me tell you, folks, how many stories would these men tell? Our fathers have told us. Our fathers have told us. And our fathers have told us how God drove out the heathen with his hand. And then he planted them. How God did afflict the people and cast them out. For they got not the land, that is our fathers, got not the land in possession by their own sword, neither did their own arm save them, but thy right hand and thine arm and the light of thy countenance, because thou hadst a favor unto them. I want you to see, first of all, God's protection. And that little phrase, thy right hand, God's protection. God's right hand is a figure for his coming between his people and the enemy. You go back to the song of Moses in Exodus chapter 15, after the children of Israel came through the Red Sea, and the Bible talks about how God's right hand came between Israel and the Egyptians. It speaks of authority. Authority. Where Jesus, even today, is seated at the right hand of the God of majesty, Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 3. Psalm 16:11, at thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. Isaiah 41:10, fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee, yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. God's protection, thy right hand. Secondly, God's power, thine arm. God's arm is a figure for an effectual power that carries through the thing designed. Listen to what Job said in chapter 40, verses 6 and 9, as he quotes the Lord. Then answered the Lord unto Job out of the whirlwind, hast thou an arm like God? Does anybody here have an arm like God? Thine arm. It speaks of trust, dependency, reliance. Isaiah 51:5, on mine arm, God says, shall they trust. To trust a man is a curse. Jeremiah 17:5, thus saith the Lord, cursed be the man that trusteth in man and maketh flesh his arm, and whose heart departeth from the Lord. But here in Psalm 44, the Father tells it in his son's ears that it is God's arm, his power, that does the delivering. It's not a father's wisdom, not a father's business acumen that provides for the family. It is a father giving glory to God. Perhaps you heard of the three boys who in the schoolyard were bragging about their fathers. And the one boy said, "My dad scribbles a few words on paper. He calls it a poem, and they give him $50. The second son said, "That's nothing. My dad scribbles a few words on paper and calls it a song, and they give him $100. Third son says, "That's nothing. My dad scribbles a few words on paper, calls it a sermon, and it takes four people to collect all the money." See, from a child's perspective, he brags on his dad. Do you ever remember bragging on your dad? I remember when I was a kid in Omaha, 3934 Ida Street, I was arguing with the neighbors across the street. We were trying to decide whose dad was the greatest. And my friend Bart got all upset at me. He says, what magazines do you get at your home? You get U.S. News and World Report? I said, I think so. Well, if it wasn't for my dad, and I forget what his dad had to do with it, then you wouldn't have such and such. I said, "Well, do you have windows in your house? If it weren't for my dad, you wouldn't have windows in your house." Because my dad was aluminum home improvements. He made windows and doors and so forth. And we just kept back and forth bragging on our dads. But you know what the dad's going to brag on? He's going to brag on thine arm, God's power. Folks, children must learn the truth. Yes, dad works hard, but ultimately, it's God's arm. It's the arm of God. Thirdly, God's presence. He speaks of the light of thy countenance. The light of God's countenance speaks of God's presence. The light, because darkness speaks of loneliness. Darkness speaks of fear. But the light of God's presence gives boldness and it gives courage. Why was all of this done for them? Why was this all done for our Father's Son? Why was this? Last part of verse 3. Because thou hadst a favor unto them. It was simply God's favor. Nothing but Yahweh's free grace. What a lesson. What God does for us, he simply does as a favor. He provides salvation not because of our goodness, but because of his own. It's called amazing grace. What God does for us. You know, when a child never hears his father brag on God, he begins to believe that he has to be self-reliant. That everything he does, he's got to do for himself. And no wonder one day he says, "I don't need God to be saved. I can work my salvation out. I can earn my salvation by doing good things." He has indeed become self-reliant. But no man can really be self-reliant, because Jesus said, "Without me, you can do. There's nothing you can do." The author of what was heard, the topic of what was heard. Now verses 4 through 8, the impact of what was heard. You know, sometimes we wonder if our kids listen and hear us. Notice the pronouns that we're going to read in these verses are not them, they, and their. These aren't in the third person, but they're in the first person. We, my, and I is what you'll see in verses 4 through 8. Now it's become personalized. Now it's the children speaking, because they said, "We have heard our fathers," verse 1. Now here's what we're going to do, verse 4. "Thou art my king, O God. Command deliverances for Jacob." You know, sometimes we wonder if kids pick up on things. Sometimes we wonder if it's worth them every once in a while sitting in on a church service when they don't have junior church. You'd be surprised at what children pick up on. You don't always have to dumb it down to speak to kids. I remember when my sons were little, and I didn't preach down. And they would pick up on things where I was so shocked. Well, Dad, you said one time in a sermon, this is when they were little guys, and I'm like, you picked up on that? You'd be surprised what children hear and what children will listen to. But I want you to see here the impact of what was heard in the present tense. You see what's said in verse 4? It's personalized. Thou art, right now, thou art my king. You know, a father is honored when his child follows in his footsteps. Perhaps he's good in sports, good in hunting, but there's nothing more important and more of a blessing than when a child follows the footsteps of his father and says, thou art my king, O God. That means so much more than a kid who's become a businessman or a kid who's become a soldier. It means so much more when the child says the same thing that the father would say, thou art my king, O God. And that should be the goal, to make much of God, to talk of his greatness, so that children can one day pray, I have heard with my ears, O God, what my daddy told me, what work you did in his days, in the times of old, you are my king too. In the present tense, we see the impact. Then we see the impact of what was heard in the future tense, verses 5 and 6. Through thee will we push down our enemies. Through thy name will we tread them under that rise up against us. For I will not trust in my bow, neither shall my sword save me. The future tense. What I heard my father say, God did for him in the olden days, God will do for me in the future. Too often we say, oh, I wish I could see God do a work in our day like he did in the old days. God is still able to do the work today that he did in the old days. I think back to the years gone by where there was revival, where the preaching was strong, and when men took a stand. And God will do today what he did in the days of old when he has the instruments and the clean vessels through which he can work. Notice how verses 5 and 6 correspond with verse 3. They learned that victory over the enemy is through thee and through thy name. They learned that even if they were skilled with the bow, or if they were good with the sword, I cannot trust in those things. No doubt these kids had learned about the 700 chosen men of Benjamin who were left-handed. Everyone could sling stones at an hair and not miss. You remember reading that in the Bible? Judges chapter 20, verse 16. These left-handed Benjamites could take their sling and they could sling it and they could hit a hair at a distance. And you talk about sharpshooters. They heard about that. But you know what these people said, these children said in verse 6? I will not trust in my bow. My sword will not save me. I cannot do this in my own power. And you'll see there in verse 6 that it is in the first person singular. I must renounce my own strength and my own righteousness as a failure and look to Jesus Christ alone. We see the impact of what was heard in the present tense, in the future tense, and then lastly in the perfect tense. And I'm using Greek grammar here. I know this is written in the Hebrew, but to explain this, the perfect tense denotes what is happening right now is a result of past action that continues. What God did for my father, he did for me. Look at verse 7. But thou hast saved us from our enemies. This is what is taking place today because of what our fathers did, and hast put them to shame that hated us. I have heard my father's stories, and Lord, you saved us from our enemies, and today we continue to experience the benefits of what you did in the past. By the way, can we say that here in the United States of America today? Because of what God did through and for our fathers in this land that today we experience the benefits we can? Have you ever read of the battles of the Revolutionary War? Have you ever read or heard of the battles of World War I, or probably more nearer to us, World War II? Some of the things that took place in the battles, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, what God did for us. The fact that our fathers fought in past wars benefits us today. We're not all speaking German today, or Japanese. Because Nazism was defeated. And we're not under communism because of our fathers. God used them and delivered us. God's deliverance of our forefathers is a deliverance from which we still benefit from today. Folks, the ultimate test for successful rearing of children is to hear them say what you read in verse 8. In God we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever. This is the only boasting that is bearable. They didn't learn to boast in themselves. They didn't learn to boast in the family name. They learned to boast in God. He's the one who gets the praise. Now, I'm talking to some men here today who may not have had a godly father. You didn't hear from them what you read here. But you can stop that cycle. You can begin today to do what you read here, to speak much of God, even a grandfather. You see, a boy who grows up saying verses 4 through 8 doesn't become a man who says those things by accident. It happens on purpose. From verses 1 to 3, the children ground their confidence. Verse 4, and provoke their thankfulness. Verse 8. What joy to one day be able to hear your children repeat verses 4 through 8. The impact of what was heard. Will your children be able to say one day, we have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us what work thou didst in their days, in the times of old. Have your children ever heard your salvation testimony? One of the greatest things God ever did for you. Let me tell you about the day I got saved. Dads, are you the spiritual leader in your home? Are you the one leading to bring your family to church, or are you holding them back? Do children, your children, hear from you about the goodness and the greatness of God? In God, we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever.